Welcome to Series 14, Episode 2 of York Hospital Ball. Today's guest is none other than Gordon Staniforth, a man who didn't just pull on a York City shirt, but helped shape the club off the pitch too, from coaching to driving the commercial side forward. Gordon arrived from Hull City in 1976, and even during tough times on the field, his commitment stood out, winning back-to-back Clubman of the Year awards before a £120,000 move to Carlisle in 1979. He went on to feature in an FA Cup semi-final with Plymouth, before returning to Booth and Crescent in 1987. This episode is proudly sponsored by James Wright, a dedicated supporter since 1995 and a loyal listener of the podcast from day one. He has a fond memory of Gordon as he took him and his mates on a behind-the-scenes tour of Booth and Crescent for his 8th birthday party after his dad won a charity auction. He'd arranged for a number of players to be in the changing room and for autographs to be obtained. A little extra that ignited years of supporting the club. Now let's hear from the man himself, Mr. Gordon Staniforth.
So Gordon, whilst this podcast is very much about York City, you have had such a fantastic, long and varied career in the game, there's no way I can just focus on your time at Booth and Crescent. For example, when I started researching your career, I was fascinated by the start of it, your appearances for England schoolboys way back in 1972. I'm hoping I've got these bits right, but playing against Holland in Eindhoven, and I think you mentioned there Wembley against West Germany, Ray Wilkins in the same side as well. They must have been a fantastic experience for someone so young.
Well, it was, if you're 14, 15, you know, this goes beyond everything else of playing at Wembley or playing international football. Yes, I wanted to be a footballer, but thrust in there at a high level, and there was 100,000 at Wembley.
Wow.
To watch an England schoolboys game. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and did you get nervous before that game? I mean, it's totally different from playing for Yorkshire boys, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think I got nervous before every game I played. There's no doubt about it. I think once I crossed the line, it was nerves seemed to settle down because I had more control then. Before the game, you haven't got any control.
And were you treated like a full international then? You get the cap and all that sort of stuff and the tracksuit and everything.
I'm not sure about the tracksuit, but I got the cap. Really, really old-fashioned England cap. Yeah, I've still got that. That's somewhere in the loft, and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, and you were saying just before we started there that to play for England schoolboys, you had to have your hair cut.
Not many people know this. I don't know when that changed, but I know for a fact that I had a letter, or my mum had a letter, saying make sure he has a short back and sides.
Incredible. And that must have been a really good feeling as well. I was thinking sort of going back into school the next time you were in, sort of, you know, most people, what do you do at the weekend? I'll hung around the park or whatever, and I play for England at Wembley. I mean, that must have been some kudos to have amongst your peers.
It was nice. It was nice. I think my mum kept me grounded, but it was nice, and you did get a little bit of recognition. I was more pleased for my family, to be honest.
Yeah, and naturally there'll have been, you know, so much hype around you yourself at that time, and you signed for Hull City professionally and made your debut for them at 17, but found it hard, I think, to establish yourself, even though in 12 appearances you scored twice, once against Fulham, then against Plymouth. Were Hull City your team growing up?
Yeah, definitely. I was born in Hull. They was the only team I wanted to play for, Dan, and I signed as an apprentice to start with, and then was made signed a pro at 17, and all I wanted to do is play in the first team, you know. I was playing with some great players there. You know, Ken Wagstaff, Ian Butler. Terry Neal signed me, the old Hull City manager. But it didn't happen. So I just wanted to move on before I got too old.
Yeah. And were you disappointed not to be given more opportunities? I mean, I was thinking maybe if you'd have played in this era, you know, you get 7 subs, don't you? So there's a good chance, and I think they're allowed to make 5. So there's a good chance that players, if they're on the bench, are going to get on. Back then, would a 1 sub, no sub? Was it difficult for you as a youngster to kind of convince a manager that you were ready for that level?
I think so. I think they had some good players while I was there in the squad, and then Wilf McGuinness came and said, would you come on loan to York City? Well, I snapped his hand off.
Yeah, and Wilf McGuinness, he obviously had a bit of a tough time at York City, didn't he? He signed on loan, and I think your debut was at Sheffield Wednesday as well, in front of 22,000 people. What do you remember about that first game for you?
I mean, Boxing Day, I believe, 20-odd thousand against Sheffield Wednesday, a massive club. What more could you want? This is really pinch yourself. You're in this game now, and it was my debut. And I thought, I'm going to show them. I think we just got beat, didn't we? Was it 3-2?
Yeah, and Brian Pollard's got one.
Yeah, I think so. But we played really, really well. And I thought, yeah, this is great.
Yeah, so did you immediately sort of think it was an easy decision to make that move, Perm? Because I was looking at your kind of stats there. You scored in the fourth game for York against Chesterfield, and you got two at Tranmere a week later in a 4-4 draw. So you must have felt quite at home, did you, quite quickly?
I did. I wanted to play every week, Dan. That was the simple thing with me. You know, I was not good at being a substitute. I wanted to play, and obviously I used that to a certain extent as a stepping stone for bigger things.
Yeah, and the club were relegated to Division 4. My next question was that. No. Were you just happy to be playing on a Saturday? And it almost didn't matter that York's, to some extent, that York City were relegated, but as long as you were out there playing. And
the story is, Wilf, when he was trying to buy me and take me, he says, I want you to get us out of this division. Well, you know what happened. We went down instead of up.
Yeah, so technically you got them out.
So it's a big joke that I pull out every now and again. But yeah, I wanted to play.
And your second season, 1977-78, you played every game, I think, that season with a very respectable 12 goals in 46 matches. For a struggling side in the bottom tier, that's pretty impressive. And you won Player of the Year as well. So you must have been, again, even though it was a tough season, as it were, from the team's point of view, from a personal perspective, you must have been delighted with how things were going.
I think it was always, I was always wanting to do better. I was always wanting to score more goals. 12 was never enough. You know, I was really hard on myself when I played, you know, with regard to setting up chances and scoring chances. I was never a great goal scorer, Dan.
No.
Throughout my career, I was never a great goal scorer. But what I do is I'd like to affect the game. But yeah, I was happy.
Yeah. And a lot of the research I did of sort of fans from all your clubs that'll kind of come on to all talked about your work rate and your sort of work ethic, as it were. So whilst you might say you weren't a great goal scorer, to fans, a lot of people just want that opportunity for... They'd love to be in your position, wouldn't they? And I think if I was in that position, I'd give it 100%. So they appreciate it when people do that.
Yeah, I think that's all I knew. It was to put myself about and work hard for my teammates, for the team. And if I chipped in with goals, that was great.
And I think that on the last day of that season, it was the lowest ever crowd, I think. And they had to apply for re-election. So I think they've had a double-dip relegation and then apply for re-election. What was the feeling around the club at that time?
There was a lot of uncertainty. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, where do we go from here? I mean, the big thing I thought of was the conditions we were working in, you know, training pitches, travel and all of that. Looking back now, it was awful. You know, we had to beg, steal and borrow a decent pitch to train on. Mm. And it's all changed now.
Yeah. And what do you mean about travel? Was it just having to go away there and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think... The buses, the travelling, the coaches, the travelling now is absolutely fabulous. What we had then was we had to stop every 15 minutes for somebody to have a toilet break and things like that, you know. So we never got there on time. We was never prepared right. But that was the times.
Yeah, and not particularly professional, was it? But also, it'd come after a really successful time in York City's history, hadn't it, when they'd got into the old second division. So it's only a few years after that, isn't it? So it must have been a real shock to supporters to go from the euphoria of playing the likes of Man United in the league to only a few years later having to, you know, double dip relegation and having to apply for re-election.
I think one game stands out for me, Dan, was when we played, I can't remember what year it was, we played Wigan in the cup and we lost 1-0 away. I think it was Charlie Wright's first game.
Right.
You know, and had they just come up or were they non-league?
Possibly at the time,
they were non-league at the time. You know, and I thought, this is not good. Getting beat to a non-league team. And we really struggled. We did.
Yeah. I suppose once you hit rock bottom, the only way is up, isn't it?
Well, it is. You've just got to dig in. But we didn't have the squad and lots of reasons. But, you know, we just had to make do.
Yeah, and you talk about the squad. I mean, I was looking that there were lean times for the club, but you had teammates like Chris Toppin, Brian Pollard, Gary Ford. They all went on to be York City legends, really. What's your memories of playing alongside those players?
Well, you know, Gary I see now and again, and it's always good to catch up with him. Polly, great player. What a great player he was, you know, and I've thoroughly enjoyed my time playing with him, and then obviously got him a nice little move to Watford. Yeah. So I'd like to think I'd have played a part in that.
He's a real character as well, isn't he?
He is.
Pollard,
he is, yeah.
I mean, lots of love from supporters, which, if I was to summarise, basically everyone said when I was asking him, you know, what's your memories of Gordon Stanhope, saying great player in a crap team. That's kind of what was the general kind of consensus. I mean, did you find it frustrating that after a while, because you'd gone past that sort of, oh, I'm happy to be playing every week, to sort of like, well, I'm doing my bit here, but I'm in a side that, you know, because it gets you down as a fan, it gets you down when you're not winning. So well, how's it like as a player?
Yeah, I totally agree. You're in for a short period of time in this professional game, and you look at what you're doing and you're thinking of, where is the club going? Where do I want to be? Is there any gossip in the newspapers about me moving on? Because, you know, they're always ready to make money out of a player, and that happened.
Yeah, we'll come on to that very, very shortly. You mentioned about Charlie Wright taking over from Wilf McGuinness. That was clearly a period of transition. What was he like to work for? Because I was sort of reading up on him, and I think some players obviously worked real well with him, some people didn't, and obviously a bit of a Marmite type of character.
Yeah, I got on well with him, there's no doubt about that. He thought he was a funny guy, and to a certain extent he was. I know at one time we were training, and he wound me up something rotten about it. He brought somebody over to interview me, similar to what we're doing now, Dan.
Yeah.
And he asked me a couple of questions, and my eyebrows just raised up, and he says, I'm only joking. So he had a sense of humour. I'm not sure how good his knowledge was.
What about football?
About being a manager.
Right. I mean, let's talk about the FA Cup. I mean, in the era you played, the FA Cup was so important, wasn't it? And I know it is important now, but not to the same extent, I don't think, as it was back then. And you were part of a great run through to the fourth round in 1978-79. And in that run, you scored in the rounds 1, 2 and 3, including twice against Scarborough.
Oh, yes.
With it being our sort of big rivals. Is that up there with your sort of highlights of your time at York City?
Oh, I was hoping you was going to mention that.
Yeah.
Because that was the local derby, if you think about it, and FA Cup. So it had all this magic around it. And yeah, I popped up with 2 goals. I felt great that day.
Yeah. What do you remember about the goals? What can you remember?
No, not a lot really. But I know we were full. There was a lot of noise. But just the rivalry and the build-up to the game, it made it more special.
And fourth round tie was your kind of reward, playing at Nottingham Forest, who at the time were one of the best teams in Europe. In fact, I think they went on and won the European Cup later that season. I managed to watch the highlights of that game, and I think the whole pitch was covered in snow. I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but Roy Kerr couldn't really keep his feet on the bits I was watching. Again, what's your memories of that game?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, in a way, because I don't think I touched the ball
in the whole game.
It was that bad a pitch. And you realise the only reason it was on was because it was on Match of the Day.
Right.
All the other games were off, but they got this game on to put on Match of the Day. The game, it should never have been played. It was hopeless. So it was one of those that you're thinking, oh, if only.
Yeah.
You know, you'd got to the fourth round, you wanted to do well, and the pitch was awful. You would never play now.
No, because when York City beat Arsenal, and drew Liverpool, the pitch on those occasions helped.
Yeah, probably.
And was a bit of a leveller. So I wondered whether when you were at Nottingham Forest, you were thinking, well, this might be good for us because,
I think this pitch was more ice than snow.
Right.
I think there was a difference between Arsenal game, where it was a bit more muddier, come snowy. But that's what I'm giving it anyhow.
1978-79 was a better season for the club, finishing much higher up the table, and even better for you. I mean, you got 19 goals in all competitions, which isn't bad for someone who says he's not a goal scorer. And you were the first player to win the Billy Fenton Trophy Player of the Year twice.
Yeah.
So you must have had a real close bond with the supporters back then.
I loved it. I really did. You know, I tried to do as much as I can on the pitch and as much as I could off the pitch. I wore my heart on my sleeve when I played, and I couldn't give any more. So I was well pleased to receive it twice, Dan.
Yeah, first player to do so as well. Do you get like a memento? I know you obviously don't keep the big trophy, but did you get a memento for
the story is, you know, on the first time I won it, I had to build a special fireplace to put it on because it was so big. That is true. I lived in Pocklington and I had nowhere to put it. So I had to build a wooden fireplace, or somebody did for me. But no, you didn't get another memento at all.
I bet you were pleased to win it the second year then, because at least you got your money's worth out of your fireplace.
Yes, I did. You're quite right.
You scored 2 hat-tricks for York City as well. One against Port Vale, which I think was the first for a number of years, and another away at Wigan, the first away hat-trick for 15 years. So again, sort of memorabilia-wise, do you still keep the match balls? Do you still have them somewhere?
Yeah, I will have them up in the loft I don't display them like all the superstars do now, but they'll be there with autographs on. Yes.
Yeah. And Peter Lorimer, I think, scored the other goal in that game at Wigan. What was he like playing with? Because he, you know, such a distinguished character of the game, wasn't he?
He was like brilliant. He was brilliant, Dan. I wanted somebody like him to come into the club to give it a lift. And he did that. Sadly, we didn't do brilliant, but just to play alongside somebody that I'd watched and admired over the years was absolutely brilliant. I loved it. I mean, just going back when I was at Hull City, I actually played with Billy Bremner,
right.
Another one of my idols.
Yeah.
So Billy Bremner and Peter Lorimer, it was fabulous.
Yeah, what was Billy Bremner like in trainings? He was quite a brutal sort of player as well, wasn't he?
He did everything that he did on the match day pitch.
Yeah.
He did his reverse pass, and I'm thinking, God, he's still got it. He's still got it. And he did everything. He was just wonderful. He was so down to earth, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I think it might have been John Byrne told me about Lorimer that he'd often be sort of watching the horse racing about 10 to 3,
oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, we're going out to kick off.
That was him. That was no doubt about that. He had other things going on. He was a keen gambler on the horses. And I was in my zone, you see. So I didn't watch what Peter was doing. All I knew that when he was training and when he was playing matches, all I wanted him to do was just whack it. Because he had the hardest shot ever.
And just before we sort of leave York, were you aware that clubs were starting to become interested in you? You mentioned earlier, you touched upon sort of the newspaper. So was that your...
Yeah.
Because there were no agents back then, was there? So how did you know that the clubs were looking at it? Was it just the newspaper, like the gossip columns?
The gossip columns. It was as simple as that. And I think there was Liverpool got a mention, which I thought, oh, yeah, why not? I think Sheffield Wednesday got a mention, but they came back in when I'd gone up to Carlisle again. But, yeah, you just read the gossip columns. Yeah, it's a bit like the iPad now.
So were you looking at it and thinking, oh, I don't fancy that move, and then another one coming up, and I'll fancy that one?
I think if you're going to better yourself, you're always looking financially to improve, to make your family more sound, you know. We know that it's a short career. I had no idea what I was going to do after playing football. But, yeah, you was always looking to better yourself.
And just before we finish with York, what's your memories of playing at Boven Crescent as a sort of ground?
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, it was... I'd have loved it now, being at the LNER. There's no doubt about it. Although Boven Crescent was special to me because it kind of gave me my first big chance of playing regular football. I can remember playing head tennis on the car park, which was awful. The lack of facilities for the grass. The gymnasium was minute. The changing rooms were not the best. Still had the big baths in those days, but it was special to me and always will be.
Seen that bath, it was condemned, wasn't it, a long time? It was still there up until it got knocked down.
Exactly.
I mean, this will be very secondary to you, I would have thought, in your memories, but when I was researching, I noticed whilst the team were a bit ropey, you had some good kits back then, didn't you? You had the Y front that I noticed you played in, the Admiral kits as well. Were they important to you as players, or do you look back and think, oh yeah, it looks all right in that?
The Y front gets on my pages on social media. There's no doubt about it. I'm really proud of that Y front because it was so unique, so different. I mean, we used to get called a rugby team. Oh, well, you got the wrong sport, you know, when we were turning out in that. And then it got changed. But yeah, I was proud of the Y. No doubt about that.
And you ended that first spell with York City with 39 goals and 141 appearances. You know, great return for £7,500 and sold 3 years later to Carlisle for £120,000. Mm. So I think York City got good value for money out of you, didn't they, in that time?
Yeah, I don't know if the rumour was true, but did they buy some floodlights with that money?
Oh, possibly.
I believe so. Michael Sinclair had mentioned that we needed some floodlights, so perhaps we have to sell somebody.
Yeah, there you go. Did you feel any pressure with that fee? Because I was looking, you're only 22 still at that point, aren't you? Still quite a relatively young player, or are you not bothered about how much people are paying?
No, I think it's just a figure. It's just a figure. And when I look back, you know, I'm thinking it was a lot of money at the time, but no, I just wanted to play.
And it looked like they built a team with a real good mixture of sort of really good experienced pros blended with young talent like yourself and the likes of Peter Beardsley. I mean, what a player he was. I only saw him sort of towards the back end of his career, but is he amongst the best you've ever played with?
He is the best.
Yeah.
Quite clear. I had a meeting with Bob Moncair from Carlisle before I'd signed, and he says, I want you to come and look after somebody and be a buddy to this player called Peter Beardsley. And as soon as I saw him on his first training day, I knew he would be a world star playing for England. Still keep in touch with him. I ended up being his best man at his wedding long, long time ago. And the key to that one is, Dan, we were struggling for relegation at Carlisle, I think, at the time. Me and Peter were playing up front. We played away at Burnley, and I scored a hat-trick away at Burnley. The next couple of days, he went to Vancouver Whitecaps because we'd avoided relegation. So what a great story that is. Mm. But yeah, still the best player I've ever played with.
Yeah, I looked at Carlisle's position. So the first year you were there, I think they came sixth. I think the manager left, someone else came in, you came 19th. Yep. And then the following season you came second, were promoted. That was in 1981-82. And second, yep, only on goal difference as well. And I, yep, think Pop Robson scored a fantastic goal at Chester, yep, on the final day. Is that all right?
He did. Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, again, another absolute star and legend that I've played with, Pop Robson, the original Brian Robson, and he was just fantastic to play with. So yeah, we had a good few years.
Yeah, it sounded like it was an amazing time. And I found some great reflections from Carlisle fans about your time, including a game against Millwall in 1982, where it said that after a fall, you'd had a fallout with Bob Stoker, and the fans, yeah, were pleading for you to be subbed on. I mean, you did eventually come on really late on in the game, and you set up two goals, and, yeah, and they won the game. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I didn't have a great relationship with Bob Stoker, I must admit. He'd won the FA Cup with Sunderland, and he'd come to Carlisle. There were a part that they were going to swap over jobs with Pop Robson. It didn't happen. We didn't see eye to eye.
Yeah, quite an old school sort of manager, yeah. I think he had quite a good reputation, shall we say, but I don't think he was ever sacked at any club, was he? I mean, was he at Blackpool?
He just had some weird ways of picking his team, and I can remember at Portsmouth away one time he decided to pick the team at 2 o'clock. We were kicking off at 3, and he had his coins on the kind of table, and he just says, this is what we're going to do. And we hadn't prepped it at all. And me and Peter Beardsley just looked at each other and says, what are we doing?
What did you win?
I think we drew 1-1, and right. Peter scored a worldly goal right from the kickoff. Went through everybody.
I imagine he'd have been unbelievable at that level. I mean, they also remember fondly the hat-tricks you got against, you mentioned the one earlier,
Burnley. But
Burnley, and also against Plymouth, who obviously later on went to play.
Yeah.
And I think Peter Beardsley scored the other that day, and goals against Newcastle you scored as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
of course, your key role in the promotion. When you have a spell like that, do you then become a fan of that club when you leave then?
Because
you have such a close bond with the supporters.
Listen, I all my clubs I've played for, and especially York, Carlisle and Plymouth, I look for their result every Saturday or every game, and I constantly look and see where they are in the league. You do grow attached.
I mean, we might be swapping places with Carlisle, possibly, but I mean, looking at their results this season,
I know that's very sad.
You must be thinking they're too big, aren't they, for non-league, really, Carlisle?
Yeah, they have. I mean, they've had a number of managers, and I know Peter has applied to be their manager 2 or 3 times, and he's got turned down. And they get decent crowds, 6 or 7 thousand. Obviously, it's gone down quite a bit now, but it's so sad.
Yeah.
Because the National League...
It's tough.
Oh, it's enormously tough.
I mean, even, like, you know, going to Truro next season, it'll be a culture shock for a lot of... fans as well as players. We mentioned you scoring against Plymouth like you had for Hull City as well earlier on in your career, as well for Carlisle. So I presume these sort of things were leaving a mark on Plymouth Argyle then, when they signed you in 1983. But it's a fair trek, isn't it, Carlisle to Plymouth?
The key to that, Dan, was Bob Moncair. He was the manager who signed me at Carlisle. He was at Plymouth and he signed me again. And there was no hesitation. You know, things with Bob Stoker weren't going well, and Bob Moncair wanted to take me. There was no hesitation. It was a long way.
Yeah. What were you doing there? I presume, are you married at this point?
Yeah. I was married in York, so I lived in Pocklington, and then it was a case of I had talks with Bob Moncair up in Carlisle, and it was a case of, to my first wife then, Sandra, I've signed for Plymouth. I'm going with Bob in his car.
Right, okay.
And I went in his car.
And your time there was, you know, was really successful, including winning another Player of the Year award as well. But of course, your best memories, I'm sure, come in the FA Cup. Again, we talked about how important it was and still is for supporters. And you were part of an unbelievable run to the all the way through to the semi-finals. And before we discuss that, I needed to mention the fifth round tie against Derby County. You had a shot that was incredible. It hit one post, rolled across the goal line, and hit the other post and stayed out. I mean, Barry Davis on the commentary thought it was in, didn't he? You must have thought it was in.
Danny Forth. It's useful. Good try and in! Off the post now! Amazingly! It hit the far post, came across the goal, hit the other post and came out.
Well, do you know what? It was one of those I thought I'll go through and I thought I'm going to smack this. And then I just saw it hit the post and I thought, it's still going in. Oh dear, it didn't go in, it hit the post. And Steve Cherry, I think, just collected it up. It was afterwards I found out that he'd actually tipped it onto the post.
Yeah, good save.
Brilliant save. Brilliant save. But it was, you know, I mean, it still gets spoken about now.
And like here now. And the FA Cup semi-finals, well, at Villa Park, you know, back in the days when they didn't have it, the semis at Wembley. Yep. Graham Taylor's Watford were the opponents. And the crowd just looks full of green, doesn't it? Yep. That green army of Plymouth fans. And that must have been some feeling coming out of the tunnel that day and seeing all that to the side.
It was incredible. I mean, it was something that you dream of. And then you look at and say to yourself, we're that close to Wembley. I know you play your semi-finals at Wembley now, but in those days it was really special to get to Wembley for the final, and we were that close. And actually, we played quite well, you know, but just 1-0.
Fine margins, isn't it?
It was fine margins, yeah.
But also in the build-up to that, you were sort of like opening shops and stuff like that, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
And the whole city must have been, you know, supporting the team.
We milked it for everything that we could. You know, because we knew this was a great opportunity to get some money into the coffers for the squad and the club, and we opened everything.
And you nearly equalised in that semi-final. Yeah. I know you cut the ball back, didn't you, for one of your teammates? Yeah. And it just
Kevin Hodges
just stayed out. That must, again, do you ever? I mean, I know it's, you were saying it's nearly 40 years, isn't it? It's past 40 years since that game. Do you ever think back, and how often do you think back and think, God, if that had just gone in, it could have changed
our
fortunes? And
I think the last time I saw Hodgie, I went down for holidays in Devon and Cornwall, and I said, what was you doing? Why didn't you score? I'd have been a hero there, because I had my assist. And it still gets laughed about.
The fine margins, I would say. You moved to Newport County, which was a tough period, I think, in your career. But I just wonder, how come you left Plymouth so soon? Because obviously you'd had real success there with a cup run, and you'd had Player of the Year as well. So it was a short spell, but
I'll tell you what, move on quite quickly. It was quite simple. I wanted a longer contract.
Right.
They offered me 1 year and I wanted 2 years, because I was thinking, come on, I need a couple more years, and then I'm starting to think about what am I going to do after playing football. And I suppose we was arguing with each other regarding that. I was starting to think about youth coaching, because I was looking to go into coaching, and I knew there was a possible opportunity at Plymouth Argyle, but it didn't happen. So I went for a longer contract.
Right, and Newport were happy to offer you the 2 years, were they? Yeah.
They were, but looking back, I should never have done it.
Was that because you were chasing the kind of contract and the money rather than
definitely
the happiness of the football?
Newport County, the facilities they had just wasn't up to where I thought they were, and Plymouth had it better. So the grass is not always greener.
No. Did you realise that quite quickly once you'd moved?
Yeah, I did. But, you know, you're hoping it'll all turn round.
Yeah,
you know, everything that you go into, you're thinking, I can change this. I was playing with Leighton James at Newport County, a Welsh legend. You know, what a fabulous player he was. But the facilities, and I think they were struggling for money as well.
And that must have been a bit of a culture shock, really, because you'd had such success with Carlisle and then Plymouth, you know, the euphoria of a cup run and promotions and everything. To then go to that, it's the kind of rollercoaster of being a footballer, I guess.
It's one of those opportunities that you sometimes take and you do regret.
Yeah. And then you returned to York City on a non-contract basis. Again, you sort of quite a few changes at the club, wasn't it? What was it like going back in? Did it feel like the same club that you left?
Well, I knew I was only going to play part-time, but they asked me to come back in and just be on the fringe. And as it happened, I was involved quite a bit. So I was kind of extending my career.
Yeah.
And quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, because I think your debut was away at Sunderland, wasn't it? So you've got two real good debuts there for York City.
It was brilliant. It was, again, another massive club. Can't remember the score, Dan.
I think it was 4-2, possibly. Yeah.
But I think it was really exciting. There's no doubt about it. And you do, you think, well, how long can I keep going?
Yeah, and you scored on the last day of the season, which turned out to be your final goal in professional football. I think there was away at Brentford.
It was.
I feel like you were quite unlucky in your spells at York City, because they were both in sort of real testing times for the club, but not long after their successful period. So you just missed out on the 70s when they got to the old division. So you just missed out on the 1980s when 101 points and all that. So
that's right.
You sort of like, again, I think when people say you were a real good player in quite ropey teams, really.
Yeah, I can remember the Brentford goal flipping. That was absolutely fabulous, that was, because, you know, I'm thinking I've scored this, and even the Brentford fans clapped. It was such a long way out. But the funny thing was, is that it was the end of the season and my career was over. I think I ended up going to play for North Ferriby after
that's right,
that,
yeah.
Which was great. But you always think there's another season, but it wasn't to be.
Because you're only sort of 31, 32 around that time. So I was thinking, was that due to injuries then? Or
no, it's just I couldn't do what I used to do. I couldn't be as quick. I couldn't be as sharp. And I don't like to hang around too long and persevere and, you know, get some stick off the fans because you couldn't run anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I would prepare to move on and do something else.
So your game was kind of based on that burst of pace and once you'd recognise that had gone, it was almost like, because some players can sort of reinvent themselves, but if that's what your main part of the game it was, isn't it?
And I mean, if I look back now, the game's changed so much. You don't get people running about like I did, because they pick and choose when they run, you know. And I look at players now and I'm thinking, I mean, Lionel Messi doesn't do anything. But when he does,
he's
unbelievable. You know, I've watched him playing for Barcelona and he walks.
Yeah.
And walks. Good players, very clever players, use the brain as well as when to run. And perhaps I was too energetic.
Yeah. And you mentioned there about North Ferriby. So it was almost like a full circle, wasn't it, coming back to Naval.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
North Ferriby's just village outside, isn't it? So was that part of that, sort of a bit of a full circle move?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I had no intentions of playing for North Ferriby, but I think it was Gadge Thompson was the manager at the time, and he just says, come and play for us. And I thought, go on then, I'll give it another go. And I think we got to the Vars semi-final.
That's
of
right,
that
yeah.
one.
So very close to Wembley again.
Incredible. But I loved every minute.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I thought, taking me back to my youth days, that's where it was like.
And the career total of 117 professional goals in 544 appearances. I mean, if we were to be sort of philosophical for one moment, if you could revisit one moment of your career, what was the pinnacle for you?
I'm thrust between York City debut away at Sheffield Wednesday, which I'll never forget, and the semi-final for Plymouth. It still puts the spine tingling down my back now.
Yeah.
You know, with regard to when I look back and think, oh, I'd like them again.
And you mentioned there you didn't see yourself as a out and out goal scorer, but of those 117, have you got a favourite?
The last one. I mean, I've got a few favourites, but I think the last one sticks with me away at Brentford for York City, when I came that second time around, and I'd finished on a high.
Did you know going into that game that was going to be your last one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that why you hit it so far out then?
Well, it was one of them. I didn't know what to do with it, so I just smacked it.
Well, fair enough. It all count. And you later coached in York. So many York fans remember your sessions fondly. And so I remember being coached by Gordon. And people also reference your time with the social club as well, running that.
Absolutely.
And you also managed Doncaster Bells, which I think was tough financially, looking back at sort of news articles.
Yep.
But I look at the way the women's game's developed now and grown in recent years. Again, do you think that might have been a bit of the right job at the wrong time almost?
Yeah, I think it was the Doncaster Bells. Again, I was asked to do it, and I've always been fascinated with the female football, the women's football, there's no doubt about that, and a great advocate. Before that, I'd actually set up York City Ladies, because they were called something else before then, and I was part of that rename change with them. But yeah, Doncaster Bells was very historic, pioneers of the women's game, but they had no future at that time. We were really doing well, runners-up of that league before the WSL came in.
Yeah, I feel like they've... I don't know loads about the women's game, but it feels like Doncaster Bells have sort of been left behind a little bit, because they were a bit... I think when York City played at Wembley in 1993, I'm sure they played Arsenal in the FA Cup final before York City played Crewe. And they were a big name, and yet they don't seem to have that name anymore. Do they? Other teams have come in and franchised and all that.
All linked to the Premier League, you know, with the money now, you know. And that was always going to be, when I was there, we was always working hard for sponsorships to get the women, the players, full-time. I wasn't full-time, but my role, because I worked at York College and I worked at Doncaster Bells, it was evident to me that my role had to go full-time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't prepared to give up my steady job at York College for that, knowing that the investment wouldn't be there.
Of course. And speaking of the women's game, I mean, your daughter Lucy's had a fantastic career, hasn't she? And played at the very highest level, including for her country. You must be so proud of her achievements in the game.
It was fabulous. I mean, she's always been brought up with football, as you can imagine. And we just watched her play. And then she got selected to go and play for England under-17s in New Zealand. So I got a nice little trip out to New Zealand to watch her there. And then another World Cup just recently, the one before last, where she played in France.
Yeah.
So I got to go and see her out there.
And I know your son, Tom, was also a really talented footballer, and we know that his career was cut short through, you know, tragedy. And absolutely no pressure to discuss that time period in your life at all. But I know myself from my own experiences, I was telling you before we came on air, that how important legacy is for people that we've lost. And I wanted to say how much I absolutely love that Lucy used to have his shirt number on the back, and really poignant tribute, and it ensures the legacy of his life kind of lives on.
Yeah, well, I mean, Thomas, again, he'd played for the schoolboys. He signed for Sheffield Wednesday as a youth trainee. He got a squad number, which happened to be 37, really early on. And then, I mean, he ended up, I think he was substitute for the Division 1 team 6 times or something like that. And if I look back, Dan, the players he played against were some great players. So he had all the future in his hands and feet, and unfortunately he made some wrong decisions, which is really sad. He would have had a great career. We miss him, but he was nothing like me. He was 6-foot-odd, ginger hair, number 5, solid centre-back.
Yeah,
and that was him.
Number 5 is what Lucy wears now, isn't it?
Well, it is what she wears. Yeah, she changed from the 37 when she came to Aston Villa, and she just decided to wear the number 5 for a change.
Yeah, and I like the fact you were an attacking player, Lucy midfield.
Yeah.
Thomas as a centre-half.
Yeah.
You just needed a goalkeeper then. You could have a little standing for 5 sides. So.
Yeah, that would be good.
And just finally, just to round it off, I mean, how often do you get to watch York City now? What do you make of the club now compared to your time there?
Oh, I think they're doing ever so well. I don't get to watch them as often as I was like. I normally go once a year, but I do listen to them. I do watch them on the national TV whenever. I love the hospital radio. I love the Radio York with regard to their coverage. And I'm hoping now they're going to do the next bit, which is get promotion.
Yeah, we all do. And God, it's been an absolute pleasure to welcome you here. I always love it when people come down to the studio as well. And I hope it's been nice for you to reminisce over some of your memories. It's a great and long career in football. You know, so congratulations on your career, and hope you're enjoying retirement. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure, Dan.
So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that episode with Gordon Staniforth. It would be really easy for me to do this podcast just based on the players that I've seen play, but I really love reading up on York City's history and certain players, and Gordon Staniforth was no exception to that. You know, what a fantastic career he'd had, and it was great to watch kind of the YouTube clips of him playing for Plymouth in the FA Cup and all that sort of thing. And to then hear him talk about that was a real pleasure. So thanks, Gordon, for giving up your time. And apologies if he's listening to this as to how long it took to get this episode out. I recorded his right at the start of putting this series together, but there was a few setbacks here and there, and it just ended up getting quite delayed. So apologies, Gordon. Hope it was worth the wait.
Big thank you as well to James Wright, who is sponsoring this episode. Always delighted to get new sponsors on board, and great to have someone like James, who's been a regular podcast listener. So the series continues next week. We're going to move it forward a little bit with John Challoner from the 2012 era, who had a real varied career before getting to York City, and it's that part of it is as kind of interesting as the York City stuff is for me. And he's actually still playing, so he's 44 now and still playing for Stamford, and has recently been playing for England seniors, which again is a great kind of story to listen to, and I think it's one of the best episodes of the series. So yeah, look out for that next week. My standard broken record time now. We are a charity podcast doing this for York Hospital Radio. We provide a service to patients in York Hospital. Please do donate to us if you can. It's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. We received about 5 or 6 donations off the back of a Matt Oogler episode, which was greatly received. So if you're enjoying this series so far, please do consider donating. Or like I've said before, if you can't donate, you know, money's a little bit tight, we totally understand. You can help us in other ways, spreading the word, giving us a rating or review. A few people have said, how do you actually do that? So Spotify doesn't really have a review system, but if you scroll to the top, you'll see there's kind of 3 dots, and if you click on that, there's an option that says rate this show, and there you can select however many stars you want to give us, preferably 5. It's Apple where you can do the writing a review. So again, if you just click on the reviews that already exist and then click write a review, and it should be fairly straightforward from there. And just finally from me, I'm delighted to have been asked by Paddy McLaughlin to be part of his testimonial year team, and lots of different events happening there. So if you search for PMC testimonial, you'll find all the kind of details there. But there's a foot golf competition, there's a dinner coming up, there's a free event at Haxby Sports Bar. Unfortunately, that is now sold out. Even though it's free, we do have to do tickets for it to know how many people can fit in the venue, and that has sold out within a couple of days. So I will do my best to record it and maybe put it out as a Hospital Ball episode as well, but it'd be great for all the listeners of this podcast to get behind it, because you know, Paddy has shown great loyalty to York City Football Club, and you know, someone I really enjoyed interviewing a few years ago now, and we've always kind of kept in touch since then. So I'm delighted to be part of that team, and yeah, look forward to kind of seeing the York City fan base get behind it.